You know when you'd like fail an exam and like your dad would give you like the diatribe as to, oh, if you'd done this, then you would have... Well, how is that useful, Dad? I failed the exam already now. How does this advice, this very cliche advice that you're giving me, how is the truth going to help me going forward? And I parlay that sentiment directly into what Toto will say in each and every single time.
He got asked a question.
And he answered it.
Yeah, Toto can only answer what he's asked. He's not a politician. He's not gonna spin answers around and, you know,
and not answer the question.
Exactly. You know,
I'm done with Mercedes. I'll be honest with you, chaps. I streamed yesterday and I ended it with a lot of them can just go home. I don't honestly. The way that things are going at the moment, I'm not interested. Hello and welcome to another Shakedown podcast. It is 22nd of the 4th, 2024, and with me as always, my brethren, my brothers, my friends, my co-host, Chazinho and Sir Baxty. How are we doing, chaps? It doesn't matter how you are doing, because we've got some F1 to talk about imminently, prompty, straight away. Let's talk about the Chinese Grand Prix. Chaz, I'm coming to you first, sir. Give me your biggest story to come out the back of said Grand Prix. Por favor.
For me, it's going to be the high of sprint race for young Mr. Lewis Hamilton, and then the lows of qualifying in P18 for the actual race, and then all of the chat that came after that. Why did he do it? What's he talking about in terms of experiments? Why is he so far behind George Russell? What's Toto got to say about that? Just a discourse that kept running and running and running and running. It's still going on now.
Go on, and should we talk about this Mercedes? Are we going to front load this Mercedes chat, Sir Baxty? Give me your biggest story out of the Chinese Grand Prix.
I think that was the biggest story, but for the sake of variety, I think I'm going to go just the brilliance of Red Bull as an organisation, and in particular, their pit stops. I mean, double stacking with a 2.1 and a 2.0 and then doing a 1.9 and a 2.0. That has to be some of the best, if not some of the best pit stop work ever in Formula One. It was incredible. And, you know, I don't like to compliment Red Bull, as people know, but I'm giving them their flowers. That was, you know, Max in the car, just driving the wheels off it. Strategically, they're better than everybody else. Operationally, they're better than everybody else. It's. I mean, if they don't lose another race this season, I wouldn't be surprised. I think we are getting a 23 version 2.
Oh, 100%, Baxty. But in other news, rain is still wet. I don't even know. In my mind, I'm trying to like compartmentalize the topics that I have emotional threshold to discuss. I really want to talk about Mercedes. I think it's only fair and right that we talk about them, because there's been bullets flying from every corner at everyone, from Colt LH at Toto Wolff. Toto Wolff has been talking some stuff. Bloody non-Mercedes fans are chiming in. Motorsport are tweeting out allegedly pseudo-racist tweet. Like, what are we doing here, Baxty? Like, give me how do you read this circumstance, the dynamic between Messrs. Russell, Hamilton and Toto? Is there bubbling acrimony or much ado about nothing?
I think with those three in particular, I think it's much ado about nothing. I think, look, Toto had some harsh words for Lewis after the race, but I think it's something that Lewis would have expected Toto to say. You know, basically Lewis was the one that led on those setup changes after the sprint race. He took full responsibility for it, and it's not unreasonable for the team principal to go, yeah, look, Lewis led us down a path that didn't work. And he was talking about, you know, the role of drivers in development of the car widely. I'm sure we'll get into that. I'll keep my powder dry on that one. But between the cold handshake, I didn't read too much into that. I think George was disappointed to have gone out in SQ2. And I think he was just, you know, it was just a little bit of that going on. And, you know, Lewis had, because of the weather, had an amazing performance. And so, yeah, I think in that regard, with those three, it's much ado about nothing. And it's just what a bit of workplace needle between the three of them that will easily just blow over, and you know they'll get through it very easily.
Jozinho, do you echo those sentiments, sir?
Yeah, I think it, as always with this, there's what we see, and then there's the sort of amalgamation and analysis of that in the fandom and in social media. So any kind of statement, and a statement had to be made about that performance, didn't it? Like Toto couldn't have not said anything about the fact that that Lewis was second in the sprint race with a frankly astonishing performance. You know, keeping that car where it was lap after lap on those tires was impressive. It showed something that I don't think I thought this car could do. But then to fall so flat in the actual race, like there was no way that a comment about that couldn't be made
about the performance in the sprint.
No, about the I think about the swing. Yeah, about the swing that happened between one and the next.
But what did Toto say about the sprint? No, because again, this was one of my sour points. I'm expecting to hear some. Well, do you know what I mean? It wasn't a bad drive, and they scanned to Toto. And again, I might be reading too much into this. I need for you guys to check me and the guys and girls in the comments too. But they scan. The camera pans to Toto and crew, and after Lewis crosses the line, the crew are all clapping and whatever, and you see Toto doing one of these. Now, maybe that's Toto just being a stoic Austrian, but it like you can forgive Lewis Hamilton fans for being like, well, what's going on here, Toto? Or again, much ado about nothing, I don't know, chaps. No, Baxter not feeling it.
Toto's about winning.
But also, that's Toto's face for the last like 3 years. He hasn't changed. Like I haven't seen him smile in ages now.
But he was smiling when George won in Brazil all those years ago. Like I don't know,
that was a win.
That's a win, man. Like
yeah, that's not the same thing.
Nico Rosberg said the perfect comment. It was Lewis just done that brilliant overtake on Hülkenberg towards the end of the race, and they shot to Toto from behind in the Mercedes garage. And Crofty said, oh, is there a smile on his face? And Nico said, probably not. If he was overtaking a Red Bull, there might be a smile. But that Toto, he knows what the problems are. He's not, he doesn't want to celebrate mediocrity. He knows that there's issues and he wants to try and sort these issues out, you know, and they've got big problems as we know. So I think, the quote that's being attributed to him for after the race is basically saying, oh, well, Lewis benefited from the fight behind, which is true. Lewis did benefit from Alonso being slower and holding up the Ferraris and the McLarens. But again, I think a lot of Toto's comments this weekend have been taken completely out of context, partly because they've been delivered to non-English speaking media outlets. And I think people are maybe not translating it properly or, you know, people are maybe not getting it across correctly. I mean, the one after the race with the engineering comments was, you know, somebody did an AI dub translation of it, which German speakers were then like, yeah, it's actually pretty accurate. And when you listen to what was reported to them, what was said, it's completely different.
But Baxter, he knows this is 2024, yeah, and we know that clickbait is zeitgeist. Like Toto Wolff isn't daft, he knows what time it is, right? So he understands very well the worth and the value of a sound bite that's going to go viral all over the world. He must do. He's a billionaire, he's not daft, he's carried this team on his shoulders for the past 8 years to eight constructors championships, etc, etc. So I don't want to do Toto Wolff a disservice and be like, well, do you know what I mean? Like I think Toto is God tier as a team principal and as a man, as a human being. So when he starts talking this stuff, like I'm just thinking, well, I think this is Hanlon's razor in reverse. I think Toto Wolff is far too bright a man, far too understanding of words and the meaning that they carry to, on so many occasions of late, make these kind of PR faux pas. I rate Toto Wolff so highly. I think now it has to be that something's going on. Like he just doesn't. Toto Wolff isn't one to misstep and speak out of turn so free. Even the Max, let's go through them, chaps, very quickly for the avoidance of doubt. So if the Max Verstappen thing is techie, the thing that he's saying about Max Verstappen, yeah, well, I know we're not performing and I'm not Max Verstappen. Like, if I were Max Verstappen, I wouldn't move to 2025. But F1 is about more than just performance. Is it really, Toto? As at April 2024, mate. Again, I'm reminded of Christian Horner. Fix your fudging car, chap. That's your first order priority that, right now, right? Fix
your car. That's a sales pitch. It's a sales pitch. Yeah, he's trying to sell the dream to Max Verstappen through the media. He's, you know, there's obviously been rumours as to what has been offered, what hasn't been offered. But he's trying to say to Max, look, we can offer you stuff beyond the car here, you know, like the ambassadorial role, a much bigger wage packet.
But back, Steve, even in and of that, I feel like he's misread the room. Do you know who Max... I've never met Max Verstappen yet, and I've never been around Max Verstappen. But we all on this call know who Max Verstappen is. Max Verstappen was quoted even as recently as today as saying that he doesn't care for all the, like the outside things. I'm here to drive a car, and I want to drive it as fast as possible. And by extension, win as many championships and races as possible. He doesn't care about all this stuff that Toto's ambassadorial role and what is that? That's a bit, if I'm putting on my Max Verstappen cap, that's a burden. He doesn't care about that. So every time Toto talks, he's either misreading the room. Like, I don't know what's going on, chaps.
The Max overtures are definitely cringy. Like I don't...
He's like...
That's the problem. That's the problem.
Please, Max, consider us.
We've got a big problem. We need you to come.
I know our performance isn't great at the moment, but you might want to consider the broader picture. Even though you are Max Verstappen and you only care about racing in life.
But I think the... I think the rest of it that you're, I think you're going to go through like a heap of comments. I'm sure you're going to bring up the one about an engineer is more important than a driver. So
that's the one that Baxley was talking about and gave broader context to, right? But even then, Chez, let's talk about that one. So Baxley's right that, in fact, you know, I saw a quote where Toto was saying, "Listen, I just tell the truth." This is Toto saying this, and he's right, but at the wrong time, Toto. How is that gonna? I get frustrated at this because I'm like, it reminds me of my parents. Like, you know, when you'd like fail an exam and like your dad would give you like the diatribe as to, oh, if you'd done this, then you would have. Well, how is that useful, Dad? I failed the exam already now. How does this advice, this very cliche advice that you're giving me, how is the truth going to help me going forward? And I parlay that sentiment directly into what Toto will say in each and every single time. All of this truth that you're spewing to Toto, how is that going to help motivate the team? Or is it going to have the opposite effect, which is where I am at with it? All this truth to the press. I don't know how it helps a Lewis or a George or the car get quick.
Cameron, the reality of this, though, is like in your analogy, who is it that's failing the exam? Like it's Mercedes that's failing the exam. It's his team, and like he can, you know, whatever he says about, and you know, you can talk about the context of these being that Lewis is heading off in another direction and going to another team, but all of this is Toto saying our car isn't good enough in lots of different ways.
But enough, bruv. You're like, you're flogging a dead donkey in that. Don't you think, like, how, like...
But he gets asked about that all the time. How is he not going to respond? There is no way that you're going to get to the end of the Chinese Grand Prix with that performance. And it's not like George did that much better. You know, he's falling away from everyone in front of him. There was no way you couldn't bring that up in the post-race
The engineer and driver importance thing? Why did he need to say that then?
He got asked a question,
and he answered it.
And he answered it. Yeah, that's Toto can only answer what he's asked. He's not a politician. He's not gonna spin answers around
and not answer the question.
Exactly. You know, his point about engineers was, when you heard the full quote, was actually valid. You know, he said there's a lot more to be lost when you lose an engineer who's only been with you for 12 months, because he takes that brain and goes elsewhere, than a driver who you can replace and plug in. And, you know, he's excited to work with a new driver after 12 years. It's a new chapter. It's not like he's going, oh, I want to get rid of Lewis. He's just saying, look, we've got a new chapter coming and it's exciting. And, you know, we've had conversations. I mean, just quickly back on the Max thing, you know, why is Toto making all these overtures? Toto's not just a CEO. He's a major shareholder in the team. And there is only one driver on the grid or outside of the grid who could help, because Mercedes are going to take a battering commercially when they lose Lewis. Like, Lewis is such a big commercial asset to them. Who's the only driver that could get anywhere near to filling that void? That's Max Verstappen, current world champion, has sponsorships out the ass. You know, and he's got he's the cover star of EA, sponsored by them, got them on his helmet. He's got Heineken. He's got all these massive sponsorships, which he can take with him to Mercedes. So from a commercial perspective, it makes complete sense for him to then say all of this outside stuff. But yeah, you know, Toto, the wider point here is Toto is being asked questions and he answers them. You know, what went wrong with Lewis today? Well, he set up the car wrong. Fact, because Lewis admitted he set the car up wrong. And then he's motivating the team and kind of giving them a path by saying, we've got to stop looking for a silver bullet. We have to find a way to get this car in the best drivable window for both cars. I am fully expecting there to be no more live testing after this weekend. I think live testing and massive experiments with the car is done. And I'd be very surprised if I heard Lewis say I was running an experimental setup and doing live testing, because you know, I think Toto's had enough of that now. I think what they need to do is they need to start clawing back the gap that's starting to open up between two of their customer teams. Right. That is bad. I mean, I think they're going to struggle to catch McLaren, but they could catch Aston Martin. Hopefully this update in Miami is going to be good, but I mean, Miami's such a weird track. I don't know how much you can really learn there.
Mate, I'm done with Mercedes, I'll be honest with you chaps. I streamed yesterday and I ended it with a lot of them can just go home. I don't, honestly, the way that things are going at the moment, I'm not interested. Like, genuinely, that customer team that you're talking, that thing there, Baxty, and exactly what Horner said. And again, Horner bodied him with that quote, right? The thing that Horner said, well, listen, I think you've got more pertinent issues to be dealing with, Toto. Like, two of your customers are in front of you. Go on, Baxty.
So I disagree with what Christian said there, because it's like, what's one way to help sort your team out is get your driver in place. Yeah, and then that gives you a direction of travel going into next year.
All right, then, look at this though, Baxty. This is where I get mad, because only a couple of sentences ago, Toto was talking about the importance of engineers and how they're the first order priority above drivers, and then he's bending over his back. Christian was right, bruv. Christian was absolutely right. You've got bigger fires to fight than trying to lure Max. Obviously, you can do them in tandem and whatever. But the way he's going about it, again, I just don't know. When I look at it, when I check it, I feel like he's just tying himself up in loops, and I'm tired of it, chaps. I just feel like, fix your fudging car, chaps. Two of your customer team are in front of you handily at this stage. Aston Martin have done the DRS thing, and McLaren are down the road again. Lando puts it in second handily with time spare. Meanwhile, Messrs. Russell and Hamilton are competing for like 10th and 9th or whatever. I don't know, chaps. That's the mean reversion. I'm done with Mercedes, chaps. Can we talk about something else? Because I've had enough. I'm about to drop the call. Let's talk about Lando. How good was that drive, Sir Baxty? Or did he do Was it mean reversion? Do you expect that from Lando Norris at this stage in his career?
I think it was the perfect response to the horror show that was the sprint. I think now I'm not going to sit here and say Lando would have won the sprint if he didn't do what he did into turn two. But I think the pace of the Red Bull in that sprint was frightening. That's another story I should have said at the start of the podcast. But I think this was a great reminder of his ability. I think it was one of the best drives of his career, to be perfectly honest with you. Look, Max was gone. You expect that. But to keep a gap to Checo Perez, who he's no slouch. He's not Max Verstappen, but he's no slouch. To keep a gap to him, that was mightily, mightily impressive. And Checo hasn't exactly had the issues with this car that he had with the RB19. Yeah, he is pretty comfortable in that car. And he's been saying that all year, that it's a lot easier to drive for him. And he's been getting, I think, other than Australia, he's been on the podium every single time. So I think that goes to show how well Lando did. And this was supposed to be a bad track for McLaren. All the data was saying long straights, it could be quite tricky for McLaren. And in Lando's hands, that car was very, very fast. Obviously, he screwed up the sprint race, made a massive mistake into turn two. Got suckered into the crafty defence of Lewis Hamilton. But yeah, what a way to answer your critics, because, he was getting quite rightly cooked. That win is coming. It will happen. I was enjoying the Nico Rosberg saying, well, he's only three off my tally when I first won. So I was enjoying that. But at some point, maybe not this year, might happen next year, Lando will win and it will be a wonderful, wonderful moment and he deserves it. But he's got to get more comfortable fighting for P1. That's the only criticism I have of him right now. He's got all the skills. He's just got to raise his game 1% or 2%.
Fair cop. And let me pitch this at you then, Chez. As rumour is rife once again that Lando Norris is being courted by Red Bull, notwithstanding him just signing a multi-year contract with McLaren. What's the move, Chez, if you are Lando Norris's team manager? Do you position Lando to ultimately take Checo Perez's seat one day in the not-too-distant future? Or do you steer him clear of that poison chalice of a seat at all costs?
Oh, not at all costs. There's always going to be a reason to go somewhere. But I think if you're Lando, you do have to kind of think about what your ultimate aim is. And I still think that Red Bull second seat is a poison chalice right now, because as good as Lando is driving, Max just has that team wrapped up around him, and the team is very much geared to having a number one, number two driver, whether they admit that or not. And it's been like that for seasons and seasons. So Lando might get closer to Max than Perez has done. He may even sneak a win here or there. And if that's all he wants, then great. But if he actually wants to win a title, I still think the best way for a driver, not just Lando, but any driver to do that, is to have a team sort of be ensconced within a team, have that team around them, have all of the resources within that team working for you. I mean, just to segue back a little bit into what you were saying, I think this weekend was a perfect microcosm of Lando Norris. The sprint race was exactly what he does when there's a little bit of extra pressure applied. I still don't fully blame sort of Sochi 2021 on him. There was a bit of team, there was a bit of team and driver in that, right? And a
go
little
on
bit
then,
of
in it. I don't understand. I as I remember, the question was, what do you think about Inter's Lando? To which Lando Norris responded, no!
Yeah, but do you remember at the same time, Lewis was saying the same thing, but eventually went, all right, I'll I'll do what the team says. And that was the thing, wasn't it? That you kind of have to trust your driver a little bit. And it was a question that was asked of him, you know, and if the driver thinks there's enough grip, he's going to say, okay, I'll carry on these tires, because that's his best way to win. And yes, I agree, it wasn't the right decision to make, but that was, you know, that was a team not being forceful enough and a driver being too confident in their own
bang. Yeah, more the latter for me than the former.
Well, there's a bit of a combo of those two things, but I think definitely in the sprint race, that was him, right? A bit of pressure was applied, and rather than backing out of that defence into turn one and two, he just kept his foot in and then ended up being...
But two different things, though, Chez. That was a racecraft thing, right?
Yeah,
around that. I know Alonso pulled it off in the race and whatever, but around that bloody long radius, turn one, turn two, it was never really going to work. Not around the outside of the seven-time champion Sir Lewis Carl Davidson Hamilton, and he should know that. That's a very different thing, though, Chez, from that exuberance. Some of which I heard over radio when he was asked to do the engine braking fit, and again, that probably wasn't the solve for Lando's understeer issues, but nevertheless, in his response, the tone of it, I can still hear that youth or exuberance that thinks he knows best. And I think Lando needs to be careful that the next time he's got a top step of the podium in his hands, he doesn't let that youthful exuberance pop up its ugly head again and cost him another victory, because it could get techie, bruv.
But it only seems to happen when he has that in his sights, when there's a victory on the line, but it's not straightforward and there's somebody sort of applying a bit of pressure. That's when he has that. He makes slight errors in judgment, and then ends up in a position where he can't do anything about it, either because of him or the car. Whereas in the race, that pressure wasn't there particularly. Yeah, he agreed. Got a clean getaway. He was in second without any pressure from behind particularly, because everyone was fighting. And he delivered a clean, unobstructed race because it was a clean, unobstructed situation. If you can do that when the pressure's been applied, then it's a different.
And therein lies your exam question, Chez. Let's talk about Ferrari very quick. In fact, before we talk about Ferrari, I need to talk about one Fernando Alonso, yeah, because some of those things that he was going on with, but for that dodgy soft tyre stint at Baxty, absolutely in there as a contender for driver of the day. Talk to me about the way he did what Carlos Sainz didn't manage to do the day before, the way he corrected onto, was it turn 16, isn't it, the final one?
Yeah,
Talk to me about how good that was, bro.
Oh, mate, that was ridiculous. I mean... Yeah, everyone likes to roll out the Max Verstappen save in Suzuka 2014 when he was stepping in, and then the one in Brazil as well. And where do you think he learned it? He probably watched all the onboards of Fernando from back in the day. I mean, to have that level of reflex at his age,
mad.
It's just like,
what do you mean at his age?
He's an older gentleman.
That's true, Chez.
Like if Charles Leclerc had done that, you'd be like, oh well, that's an, yeah, you kind of be less surprised by it. But because Alonso did it in his 40s and still got the pace to hang with the kids, you know, it was a great drive, and he got undone by a bit of foul strategy from Aston Martin. But once again, he's carrying the team on his back, you know, and he's doing great things. I don't particularly want to talk about his teammate because I'll rant for about half an hour.
Oh, we do need to try and get to that, but we're rounding third base, chaps. I'll just say about Fernando Plan Alonso that dude, I don't know, bruv. I think you summarise who Alonso is by the fact that, listen, he's nearly, do you know what I mean? He's nearly in the wall. He's like half a second or split second even away from a DNF and a fairly hefty shunt. And as soon as he fixes it, he's straight back in the DRS, isn't he?
It's unbelievable.
Instantly, bro.
Just,
like,
just
no
loss of forward momentum. It was crazy.
This dude. New in the Matrix settings. I love me a bit of Fernie. People can say whatever they want to about him and his bad character outside of the cockpit. But when he does something like that, I'm just like... And then he goes and nails the move around the outside, turn one, turn two, that Lando couldn't pull off. I'm just like, oh, mate, if you like F1, how do you not like Fernando Alonso, the driver. Incredible. Shez, let me pitch this at you very quickly. What happened to Ferrari this weekend? Was Charles Leclerc out of line on race day in the way that he hung out Carlos Sainz's teammate to dry? And conversely, similarly even, was Carlos Sainz out of order during the sprint in the way that he did over or tried to do over Charles Leclerc?
What does Martin Brundle say? Six of one, half a dozen of the other. There was a little bit of that. The car probably wasn't as quick over a single lap as they were expecting it to be, there was a bit of argy bargy on both sides. But look, we have criticised Leclerc for playing the team game and just being a little bit yes, yes, yes all the time. On this channel quite a bit. So for me, it was quite nice to see that, number one, he complained on the radio about Carlos. Second, it was quite nice for me to hear when he was being asked to pull a one-stopper, are you sure this is what we should do? I think we've made a mistake. You know, both of them made the same kind of comments, but, you know, we're always saying that Charles should do that more often. And Carlos, similarly, you know, I don't mind that he sort of got his arms out a little bit. I think the move into the hairpin was a little bit, well, it was over the edge. Like, he definitely shouldn't have done that. But I like it. I like the fact that they're one, that they're allowed to race, which is not something that you can say of Ferrari historically. And two, that both of them are super competitive. It was interesting to see the gap between the two of them during qualifying. It was only a few thousandths in the end, wasn't it?
Which was big from Carlos, by the way, after having made the mistake. Because I expected Carlos to go back to Carlos 1.0 on the back of that mistake. For him to dust himself off and then push one of the greatest qualifiers that we've ever seen in F1 history, if the Tifosi to be believed, to within a few hundredths, I thought was props to Carlos.
I'll agree with that. And it was really good, but then he shouldn't have really made that mistake in the first place. He got really, really close to Leclerc, didn't he? And Leclerc came second on the road to him as well, didn't he? So he had slightly better track conditions. So yeah, I agree. It was a good performance. But in the race, it sort of changed, didn't it? Science got a bit scrappy and a bit messy, and Leclerc did a Lando and was unperturbed and sort of, you know, drove to the mean of the car in a way that Science wasn't really able to do.
It felt like a bit of a tipping point, you know, seeing them. They've always been cool with each other. And when I saw Carlos Science after the sprint go through the garage and say hello to every single one of those people in the garage, minus Charles and Charles' race engineer, it felt like a tipping point. Even when Carlos made the mistake, it felt like a reversion to Carlos 1.0. Like he's trended those unforced errors down to zero of late. And the way that he made the mistake, not that he made the mistake, but the fact that he kept his foot deep in the throttle in the midst of the oversteer was, what are you doing, Carlos? Like, who are? I thought that man had gone away making those mistakes, but I don't. He's still there, isn't he? He's still there.
The thing is, though, with Carlos at the moment, if you look at his peak of dominance within this season, it only really spans two races. Like in Bahrain, he was out qualified, and then there was an issue with Charles' brakes, and we can argue that one for a while if you want to. He was then stricken down with appendicitis in Saudi, so we don't know what he would have done there. And then he was ahead in Australia and Japan, so two races. And then in China, it sort of swung back a little bit. And I do think Carlos has periods within a season where he's on top, but it never lasts long enough for it to be sustained and allow him to really exert anything on top of his rival in the other garage. It will be interesting to see what happens over the course of this season. But at the moment, it's an N equals two on races.
Yeah, no, no, it's a small, it's too small a sample size to draw any definitive conclusions, Chez. But I told you already, yeah, if science beats Champagne Charles Lawrence. Leclerc the, over the course of this season, having raced one less race, Chez, the champers is on ice, ready to go. Finally, Baxi, let me pitch this at you. This is a thought experiment that I've been having internally. There was a moment I've long said that F1 needs to do more around celebrating a Checo Perez in Mexico as an example. And it did that really well with Zhou Guanyu and parking him up and allowing him to kind of bask in the glory of his adoring fans. That there's a picture on the Twitter that you would have seen when he was a young boy and that you transition to now him a man at an F1 track at his home Grand Prix. Baxley, I'm going to pitch it to you this way though, because I see talk of them extending the point scoring positions potentially down as low as 12th, for which you will get 1 point. There's a lot of rancor and difference in the community, and again, that was that. I think that was a moment to be celebrated, the hometown hero or whatever, or the homecoming of Zhou Guanyu. However, diehards are asking the question of F1 whether it needs to be more of a meritocracy. Does F1 deserve some criticism, Baxter, with the point scoring thing in mind, with the fact that Zhou Guanyu didn't even finish in the points on Sunday? I think he was something like 14th. Is F1 losing its hard edge and celebrating mediocrity sometimes? Techie, eh? Sorry, Baxter.
I think not. I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to do the classic kind of look over there tactic, because you've got no contest at the front. You know who's going to win every weekend. It's going to be Max or Red Bull, and if not, maybe a Ferrari or Checo, or that's it basically at the moment. So they're thinking, oh, but we've got all these great scraps and they're not getting anything for it, so let's try and reward them. And I was like, well, that's not the problem here. Like, you know, at the moment we have 20 cars on track, and if all finish, half of them score points. I think that's quite a nice balance to have. I think that if you start doing it more and more, you start verging on participation medals.
That's the words that I was looking for. Back.
I don't like that. I think that's ridiculous. I think if you get in the top 10, good for you. You score points. If you don't, yeah. Tough. Now, I liked the Zhou Guanyu moment because it's the first. He's waited 3 years for this moment, and you know he's a local boy, and he wanted to be celebrated. And I think it's probably the only chance they're going to get to do it. Realistically, and I think it was a very nice moment that I don't think should be repeated. I think it was a nice chance for the Chinese crowd to celebrate the first ever Chinese driver in Formula One, even though he's been there for 2 years. Just to celebrate him, celebrate what he's done in the sport, which I know some people say, yeah, it's not a lot that he's achieved, but he's still there and the journey he's gone on and everything else. I think that was a very emotional moment that has been postponed for 2 years because of COVID regulations and everything else. So, yeah, I think as a one-off, great. I don't think they should. Yeah, unless, for example, Lewis says, actually, you know what, I'm not going to Ferrari next year, I'm going to retire, and they do something big at Silverstone for him and other tracks that he's popular. But, you know, as a sort of farewell tour. But other than that, yeah, or if another driver, like Fernando or somebody, decides that they're off. But, yeah, no, one-off, great. Not again.
They would never do that for Lewis Hamilton. Around. So you imagine Lewis finished 14th and he's allowed to park up next to Max and whoever else finishes on the podium.
He parked behind them, didn't he? Yeah. Well, Vettel was allowed to go to the
in
Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, and his swan song. Hey, I don't know, it's techie. It is very techie, this F1 thing. I don't know where it's going in 2024, but they need to do some other things. Finally, chaps, I need to issue an apology for the avoidance of doubt, because I've been quite harsh on one Karun Chandhok over the past couple of weeks and months. And he was incredible this weekend. I thought the chemistry between him and Nico Rosberg. It was just like there was friction and there was personality that I didn't think Karun Chandhok had. It was brilliant, knowledge interlaced. Karun Chandhok, I don't even say his name properly. Put some respect on that man's name. He and Nico Rosberg together are the new meta. I want to see those two at every single race on my broadcast because they were gold. They lit a flame, that bloody Monday Night Football set that hadn't worked with Pinks and Bernie Collins. I thought it was incredible, lads, but I digress. Right, I'm going to have to go and run. I need to spit some flames on Toto Wolff's name again, don't I? It's only fair and true. Right, that has been another Shakedown podcast. For Shez of the Tired F1 Pod, shout out to cousin Ahmad. For Baxty of Baxty BF1, I've been Cameron, as always. If you're listening on a podcasting platform, 5-star review, follow. If you're watching on the YouTubes, por favor, comment, like, subscribe. Between now and next time, as always, remember to look but never stare.